Marcia Rudd Kyle at her home on the lake in Lakeville.
I've been asked to say some things about my father, Malcolm J. Rudd, son of Mariah Holly and William Beardsley Rudd. He was born in 1877 and died in 1942. He was at Hotchkiss in the class of 1896. He spent 2 years at Harvard taking all the history courses he could take, and then transferred to Yale and was in the class of 1900, and did the same, taking all the history courses. This couldn't be done today for graduating points. He was always interested in local history from an early age, and he wrote pamphlets on gravestones and Indian history of the town at age 11. Interested in who the early settlers were, where they came from, what had happened to their descendants. He knew more about people's history than they knew or cared about themselves. He was descended from the Holly, Coffing, Porter, and Robbins families, and some others, who had come to the town early on, and who had interests in the town, in ore mining, banking, railroading, manufacturing, engineering, conveying, preaching, politicking, and farming. His idea of fun was to haunt bookstores in his spare time, and so over 50 years he collected a library of 3,000 books on New England history, 1,000 being on Connecticut alone. And usually when I mention this to people, people say, oh, I didn't know there were that many books on Connecticut history. A few thousand books also on American history in general. These were housed mostly in a large room in the knife factory, the Holly Manufacturing Company. I was helping him catalog this library at the time of his death in 1942. It was his wish that the town would house these books in a fireproof building, but no one seemed interested at the time, and as my mother needed money, the library was sold. Some books were given to Yale, some sold to bookstores, some to the Scoville Library, some sold to collectors. Sets were broken up, and so some valuable information for the town of Salisbury was lost in the procedure. It was a shame, really.
I'm going to stop.
I remember a truck from Whitlock's bookstore in New Haven driving up to our front steps. An attractive young man drove the truck, so we asked him for lunch after he'd loaded his truck. It turned out his last name was Yale, and he was working his way through Yale on a scholarship set up by Elihu Yale for Yale descendants and working his way by doing odd jobs. Father was very accurate, and many of his books had lightly penciled corrections and connotations in the margins saying, incorrect, not so, or might be some truth in it. And sometimes dates were corrected. He possessed what the family called his graveyard kit. It consisted of a wide-brimmed hat for shade, a folding camp stool to sit on, a satchel in which were scouring powder, water, and steel wool for cleaning gravestones, and a crowbar for prying up fallen gravestones. People came to him from miles around inquiring about their family history, and he would tell them all he knew without taking any remuneration for the information. Lila Nash told me once that a great deal of what she knew of town history was due to M.D. Rudd's information. This would have pleased him. He used to recite the Gettysburg Address on Memorial Day. I remember one such time after an address walking with him through the crowd at the cemetery. Walking behind us were two teenage boys. One said, who is this M.D. Rudd anyway? And the other boy said, oh, he's one of those mouthy, booky Hollies. This really amused us, as one of M.D. Rudd's attributes was a good sense of humor, especially about himself. After his death, most of his historical data went to his younger brother, Charles Rudd, and so on to Charles Rudd's son, John Rudd. He wrote Men of Worth of Salisbury Birth for the Lakeville Journal, as well as other historical articles for the Old Connecticut Magazine. In later life, he was in the Connecticut House of Representatives and in the State Senate. He took great pride in the town of Salisbury. When I walked down to the factory with him, he would carry a stick with a metal point with which to pick up papers tossed on the street and gutters. These he put in the trash bin when he reached the factory. Now that is what I call local spirit. Malcolm Rudd was born at Hollywood in Lakeville, and after he was married for 10 years, he moved down to the White House next to the Holly Williams house. During the first 10 years of his marriage to Eva Cook Rudd, 4 children were born at Hollywood. Richard Malcolm Rudd, who died at 16, Alexander Holly Rudd, who died when he was 7, Roswell Hopkins Rudd, and Marcia Rudd. Hollywood and the knife factory were left to my father. He operated the factory until the 1930s, when the Depression and automatic and electric knife sharpeners came in. Then he went into politics and was at one time deputy commissioner of motor vehicles.
Okay, Marcia, let me have a little bit about yourself. Where did you go to school in Lakeville?
I went to Miss Stewart's school, which was up opposite the Iron Master's Motor Lodge. Now, the gray house opposite that was where Miss Stewart's school was.
And how did you get there from Lakeville?
I used to walk. And in the winter, I'd have to ski or go on snowshoes. And sometimes my brothers would come and get me and pull me home on a sled in the winter.
And then from there to school, where'd you go?
At 12, I went away to boarding school to Abbott Academy in Andover, Massachusetts. And the reason I went there, Miss Bailey, who was the principal of the of Abbott, had been a teacher at the Interlochen School for Girls here in Lakeville, which was a sister school to Hotchkiss. And my mother had come to Lakeville to teach at the Interlochen School.
Which is now Wake Robin Inn.
Which is now where the Wake Robin Inn is. Mm-hmm. And as my brother, Dick, had just died, it was a pretty hard time for the family, so I was sent off to school. And then after going to Abbott, I went to Wheelock College in Boston, which was a regular college, plus training for primary teaching. And then I went to Port Washington and Sands Point, Long Island, and taught for 4 years, third and fourth grades there, before I was married in 1938 to Carl Kyle. Business in Darien for 35 years?
Oh, yeah, you can. Mr. Kyle, what did you do?
My husband was in the lumber business in Darien for 35 years. Then he retired and we moved up to Lakeville. As he said, I was like a salmon spawning and had to return to the land of my birth.
You have one son?
I have one son, Charles Kyle, who has his doctorate in anthropology and teaches at Buffalo University. And his wife teaches psychology. They have a daughter, 17, Aphrodite, and a son, 14, Carl Michael.
What did you do for entertainment in your little?
Well, we knew several musical families, the Allen family, for one, and we'd meet, and everybody would play instruments or the piano or sing, or we'd play cards, or we'd play games, charades, things like that, guessing games, dominoes. Families got together for supper and for playing games, and there, you know, wasn't the TV and all.
Where'd you go swimming in those days?
The Grove.
Oh, at the Grove?
Everybody went swimming at the Grove, as they always have, and young people find that a nice place to meet and get to know one another.
Sure. And now what the musical part, like Hop was very musical, where does that come in your family anywhere?
My father had a lovely tenor voice. I used to accompany him on the piano, and in later life, when he couldn't reach the high notes, he'd sort of take a hold of his Adam's apple and shake it a little to get the high note. And my mother, who was really very modest, played the piano, the guitar, the violin, and sang.
And where'd she come from? Up near the Cape somewhere?
She came from Gloucester, Massachusetts.
Let me see. And she made
and my father always said she had webbed feet because she sat in the surf.
What about the movie? What about the movies? Where'd you go to the movies in those days?
Well, when I was growing up, that would be in the 20s. There were two movie houses in Lakeville. One over Robert Storr and the Stewart's movie theater.
That's where the laundromat is now?
Over in, yeah, mm-hmm. Near there. And you could tell what was going on in the movies. You didn't always have to go in. You could just stand outside and you could hear the player piano or somebody playing the piano. I think that is
across my fingers.
Let's see now. Let me play the... Listen.
How about your battery?
The love scene or if it was a galloping thing that the troops were coming.
Yeah.
Just by standing outside and listening through the door.
Was it like any ice cream parlors or...
Yeah, they're... Oh. Yeah. There were three ice cream parlors. Liberty's Drugstore had the best ice cream sodas and little white table wire seats and so forth. And the Jigger Shop had sodas and sundaes.
And the Jigger Shop was where?
The Jigger Shop is where the bomb and electric heating thing is now.
Oh.
And then Ma Dufour's.
Well, that's
which
where
is down in the corner where the
jewelry store.
Yeah, the jewelry store is, and she also had penny candy that we used to buy on the way to school.
Good.
You know, you'd get 10 or 20 little candies for a penny or something. Great decision as to what to buy at Ma Dufour's. Mm-hmm. Ma Dufour was a little plump and sturdy, and she wore her hair piled up in a big knot on top of her head, and she was so kind. And loved children. And they always got a few extra candies in their bag.
Good. And what about Main Street now, from what it was when you were little?
Main Street, when I was little, all the houses housed families and people. The store section was across from the fire department, and there were a whole row of stores there. Heaton's and Barnett's department store, and
barber
then there
was shop.
A barber shop and a delicatessen, and two little old ladies had a little knick-knack shop, and Ma Dufour's was flourishing, and it was a busy place.
And where did you get the groceries? Where was a grocery store?
Oh, there were two or three grocery stores. There was an A&P and a couple of butcher shops, and a jewelry store and a couple of drug stores, and the place was really flourishing. The Hotchkiss boys used to come down from Hotchkiss to go to the movies and to eat, and there were a couple of clothing stores where haberdashers came up from New Haven once a week or something, and the Hotchkiss boys came down. And there was much more going on between Hotchkiss and the town, much more interest and local feeling, because they would come down to the town for things. And once in a while they would get put on a Hotchkiss play down at the Roberts Hall.
Oh, that's
and the whole town would go and see the Hotchkiss play.
The Roberts Hall is where the food center is now, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That building
there? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was much more rapport between the town and the school. A good many people have asked me about Hollywood, and they've said, oh, is that named after Hollywood, California?
Right.
I was reading a biography by Lillian Gish about her early days in the movies, and she said that when she first went to California, she was with the David Wark Griffiths, and Mrs. David Wark Griffith said that she had... been up in northwestern Connecticut visiting an old school friend from the Spence School, and this was my grandmother, Mrs. William Rutt. And so they were thinking of a name for this movie studio, and she said, well, why not call it Hollywood after this place where I've just been visiting in northwest Connecticut? I've been trying to find a copy of the Lillian Gish biography ever since, and so far I haven't come up with one, because I would like to have this statement in writing.